We are exactly 1 week away from the midterm elections, and the environment, environmental justice, and climate change are key issues of concern among many voters, with climate change in particular ranked by Democrats as the second highest priority issue in their voting. Corporate spending is also well afoot with, for example, ExxonMobil spending some $250 million in political advertising just on Facebook ads, including ads targeting expanded offshore drilling. We're going to turn now to Alaska, where just last week, the Trump administration approved Hilcorp Energy's plan to drill for oil off the coast of Alaska in the Beaufort Sea. It would be the first oil and gas production in federal waters in Alaska if it moves forward. To understand the significance of this decision, we're going to hear from two Alaskans. First, joining us together will be Elizabeth Balster Dabney. She is Executive Director of Northern Alaska Environmental Center, which is dedicated to environmental conservation and stewardship in the interior and Arctic Alaska. Northern Center is based in Fairbanks. Elizabeth is joining us this morning from New York. Thanks for being with us, Elizabeth.
Thank you for having me.
Also joining us is Adrian Okoluk-Titus, a native Inupiaq who serves as community organizer for Native Movement, a local nonprofit that supports indigenous-led grassroots movements for social, environmental, and economic justice with a focus on health and well-being for all. Adrian joins us from Fairbanks. Thanks for being with us, Adrian.
Utlalota. Thank you for having me.
Our pleasure. Let me start with you, Elizabeth. Can you discuss what happened last week, what decision the Interior Department made related to offshore drilling in Alaska?
For sure. So the approval came from Interior's Department of Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, BOEM, and is conditional on Hilcorp Energy's would be conditional on Hilcorp being able to get federal permits and abide by standards like restricting drilling season. So it's the first time we see in Alaska offshore federal waters that the federal government has approved oil and gas development.
I mean, how significant of a decision is this? You and I met when I was in Alaska heading up to Wainwright, where Shell was on its way to start drilling. That would have been in the Chukchi Sea. And essentially, through various organizing and decisions, the Obama administration not only banned Shell's operations, but banned drilling in the Arctic altogether, or at least attempted to. And this is just over to the east off the Beaufort Sea. So, yeah, please talk about the significance of this move.
So at the end of President Obama's administration, President Obama withdrew a large portion of the Arctic Ocean. This Liberty project, the Hilcorp project, is not within those withdrawals, but the Northern Alaska Environmental Center and several other conservation organizations in a case called LCV versus Trump said that President Trump's attempt to undo Arctic Ocean withdrawals are illegal. And President Obama took that action as he was legally entitled to as president under OXLA Section 12, and that really only a congressional act can reverse that decision. So I think that was a significant signal from President Obama that he was listening to Alaskans when we said that we don't want to see development of any kind in Alaska's offshore, whether that's the Beaufort or the Chukchi. We have survived the first hurdle in that piece of litigation, and now the case will be heard on its merits on November 9th. Mind you, the Hilcorp development is not these are leases that have existed since the 90s. They were BP's. Hilcorp bought them in 2014 and plans to develop them if they get approval for the permits. But this is a really bold ignoring of this administration of what Alaskans want to see for the offshore, which is ultimate protection and to keep oil and gas in the ground. Recent polls have shown that 72% of Alaskans are really concerned about climate change. And we know to stay within a 2-degree scenario, warming scenario, we need to keep all known reserves in the Arctic in the ground.
Okay, so this area where the Hilcorp permits would take effect is in federal waters offshore Alaska in the Beaufort Sea, not far from the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. Adrian Okoluktaitis, joining us from Native Movement in Fairbanks. Can you talk about this part of Alaska for people who have never been there, what it would mean to have oil drilling here?
It is one of the last untouched ecosystems in the world. The Arctic National Wildlife Refuge is the remaining 5% of the Arctic slope that remains undeveloped. Birds from all 50 states and all over the world, migratory birds fly there to nest. Seals, whales, walrus, polar bears, wolverines, other Arctic animals thrive in this ecosystem. And this plan to drilling off these shores, especially so close to where there's an abundance of kelp, there's going to be an abundance of other sea animals that are going to be disrupted in these waters and in this land if this is to move forward with development. The people that Arctic rely on this ecosystem to continue their way of life, which has been since time immemorial. And we see such a false misrepresentation or false representation of tribal people in the places where these decisions are being made. Alaska Native corporations, the leaders that are being brought forward there are not speaking for people that are being impacted in these communities and the concerns that they have about this ecosystem that has carried their way of life for generations.
And the decision to move forward on this drilling, you have discussed as an issue that is deeply intertwined with politics in the state, a deal essentially carved out between Senator Murkowski and the Trump administration over the tax bill. Can you talk about that?
So last year when Senator Murkowski initially voted on the tax bill, she opposed it and in favor of her to get that vote, President Trump and his administration slipped in a mandate for drilling in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge and in the reserve. And in turn, she voted for the tax bill. And since then, there has been a mandate put in place. It was her father's legacy to open this refuge for development, and she pushed for it. And we're seeing a false representation of Alaska's people. We hear that in the polls that are being taken. And we hear it when we are meeting and coming together, and she's not doing her duty as a senator by pushing for this drilling. We're seeing that in the climate change and all of the other different changes in the Arctic that are impacting frontline communities. And it's just going to exacerbate this climate impact that is already moving forward because of the rest of the world. And what happens in the Arctic is going to affect the rest of the world. And she knows that. The rest of our people that are representing us in Juneau and in D.C. know that.
Well, and the tax bill then, I actually wrote on the tax bill for an article that I wrote for Pacific Standard, finding that the tax bill gave $25 billion in tax breaks to the oil and gas industry alone. Definitely a payoff to the industry, and now apparently a payoff that keeps giving with this opening up to Hillcorp to drill in offshore Alaska. Elizabeth Dabney, Executive Director of Northern Alaska Environmental Center, can you speak some more to the politics of this decision?
So
Our state economy in Alaska is in a complete bust. We had a tax structure that was passed 3 years ago under SB 21 that gave more tax breaks to oil and gas developers on the North Slope with the intention that it would incentivize more development. Well, we've seen the complete opposite. So we're paying consequences where oil and gas companies are still going strong. Our state government is really suffering, and that's having huge, we're paying huge consequences as Alaskans for our public services, our education, and some of our key environmental departments to be able to thrive and be able to meet the needs of Alaskans. So more incentivizing in the way of tax breaks really hasn't been the promise that it'll create more jobs, it'll create more development on the slope, more production, more oil in the Trans-Alaska pipeline hasn't come to fruition.
Well, and also, Secretary Zinke said in announcing the approval of Hilcorp's drilling that, of course, this is part of President Trump's, quote, American energy dominance agenda, which replaces the previous stated agenda for decades, which was in multiple administrations, which was U.S. energy independence. Instead, this administration has shifted that to energy dominance, promoting a widespread development of fossil fuels across the United States. You know, speaking from the perspective of Alaska, which has been particularly hard hit by climate change, can you discuss the impacts of climate change in Alaska for listeners who aren't aware of them and what you fear more oil and gas drilling will bring?
It will be devastating, first and foremost. The Alaska, Arctic Alaska, is experiencing the impacts of climate change at three times the rate of the rest of the United States, all of Alaska at two times the rate. And like Adrian just said, what happens in the Arctic doesn't stay in the Arctic. We're ground zero, the canary in the climate change coal mine, and it's really not a position that we want to be in. We, again, know that to stay within that 2-degree warming scenario, we have to keep it in the ground. We saw a pretty devastating report, the IPCC, that just came out. We know we have to make pretty drastic changes, or it looks pretty bleak by 2052. Arctic communities will face the first negative impacts of climate change, presenting a severe social environmental justice issue. And this is already occurring in our North Slope communities, whether that's access to clean water, access to food, access to transportation routes, the melting sea ice. We're already seeing these things as Alaskans. And so the idea that the administration, in the face of some really harsh climate change impacts, decides that they want to make Alaska even more energy dominant with the production of oil and gas is really myopic, short-sighted, and a pretty outdated way of thinking.
And there's also, I was shocked when I was there. You know, we're in California where we are having increasing fires each year. Mm-hmm. I was shocked when I was there. On the planes that I was on, I think every person was a firefighter. There were so many fires taking place in Alaska. Can you talk about the increase in fires there and how unusual that is?
There are a lot of naturally occurring wildfires due to lightning, but the we have noticed in the last 5 to 10 years that the increase in wildfires over all across the whole state, so where there's some places where there is usually more, we're seeing them kind of across the board in Alaska, which is having consequences. Wildfires are not necessarily a bad thing. They help be able to bring forest renewal, new growth. But what we're seeing is that more structures, more communities are impacted by wildfires that are occurring, and more rapidly as we're seeing the impacts of climate change.
Adrian Titus, with the Native Movement, can you talk about the organizing that's been happening to try to halt offshore drilling in Alaska and to try and keep drilling out of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge?
Native Movement works at creating people power, and in doing so, we uplift and project voices from Indigenous communities, frontline communities that are being impacted by climate change and oil and gas development and extractive industries. And we bring them to the spaces where their voices are going to be heard in these decision-making processes. And it really is creating that space for people to be able to have an ability to project their voice in a way it isn't being suppressed by outside forces. We see a lot of suppression and dissent within these Alaska Native corporations and these communities that are funded and fueled by them because of extractive industry. And so we work at helping people be able to tell their stories.
And Elizabeth Balster Dabney, Executive Director of Northern Alaska Environment Center, can you talk about the organizing that has already gone on around offshore drilling and the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge as well, and what you see moving forward?
So our organization started in the 70s to raise Alaskan voices. And one really positive organizing that is happening is that partnerships and allyships are being built with our Alaska Native and Indigenous communities, and really working to make sure that those community voices are uplifted. These communities are the stewards, the caretakers of these lands for millennia. And our work in Fairbanks is to help amplify and elevate those voices that are most directly impacted. And I see a positive change in Alaska talking about sacred lands that ultimately need to be left alone and make sure that oil and gas development doesn't occur. For example, in the coastal plain of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, home to the porcupine caribou herd, which the Gwich'in Nation refers to as the sacred place where life begins. And so I think I definitely see in Alaska an uptick in the community and a movement being built that is being led by strong Indigenous-led organizations and Indigenous voices. And as traditional conservation organizations, we're able to help and come alongside and hopefully amplify and elevate the communities that are first experiencing the harshest impacts of energy development extraction on the North Slope.
How significant of a threat do you see this move with allowing Hillcorp to move forward with these permits? As you say, these are permits that have basically been in the mix of fighting over offshore drilling in the Arctic for decades at this point. Do you see this as a serious risk of a broad opening in the Arctic? Do you see it as a one-off that you can stop with a lawsuit? You know, tell us the significance of this.
I think it's both. I think we're with the barrage that we're facing in Alaska right now, we're taking it one by one. So I do think that we're battling as they come. I think Hillcorp is particularly egregious in that we already know in 2017 in the Cook Inlet region, the Hillcorp was fined $200,000 for violations, essentially a pipeline leaking into Cook Inlet that took almost 2 months before a reaction. An action could be taken to even try to clean it up. These particular developments in the ocean are very short-sighted and dangerous. There is no way to clean up an oil spill in the Arctic Ocean, and the response rate is very long. If you're familiar with the map of Alaska on the very southern coast, there's the Coast Guard on the Kodiak Island. So you would have to go from the southern region of Alaska all the way around to the Arctic Ocean for a response team to even respond. The damage that would be done in the time would be completely devastating to North Slope communities, all the way from Point Hope all the way over to Cocktovic, which is on the Beaufort Sea. So,
go ahead.
So we're seeing this is an example of a very rushed process under the Trump administration, under Zinke's interior, to get as much land opened, as many waters opened as possible for oil and gas development in the short amount of time they may have in office. And it's particularly dangerous, and you can be guaranteed that Alaskans, environmental groups, indigenous-led groups will definitely be there and at the ready to be opposing any type of oil and gas in the offshore.
And as you say, this comes after the Trump administration, the Trump administration has sought to open up virtually all federal waters throughout the United States to offshore oil and gas drilling, while simultaneously eliminating some of the key regulations that were put in place by the Obama administration in the wake of the BP Deepwater Horizon disaster. So with that, I want to thank you both so much for sharing your insight and information with us. Our guests this morning were Elizabeth Bouster Dabney, Executive Director of the Northern Alaska Environmental Center. It's based in Fairbanks. She is joining us this morning from New York. Adrian Okoloktaitis is a Native Inupiaq and serves as a community organizer for Native Movement. She joins us this morning from Fairbanks. Thank you both so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
And that takes us to 8:29 in the morning. The program's up front. My name's Brian Edwards-Tiekert.
And I'm Antonia Yuhas, and I forgot to read a very important correction. I misstated ExxonMobil's spending by a significant amount. ExxonMobil has spent $2.1 million on Facebook ads since May. The total Facebook political ad spending was $256 million. So thank you for that correction, Brian Edwards-Tiekert.
Total by all purchasers.